All right, so welcome to Two Fools Podcast. I'm Dave, and today with me is my guest, Mike Brown from DenziCaster.
Among other things.
Among other things. And I wanted to do one on deck building, so Mike owns like three of the games that we're going to talk about, so I thought he'd be a good person to add to it.
I think I own more than three, but...
Of the three we're going to talk about.
Oh, okay, sure.
For those of you who don't know, deck building is a game where normally you open the box and you build your deck through the gameplay, as opposed to games like Magic the Gathering where you collect your own cards and bring them to the game. Is that a good short version?
It is. Deck building is basically was basically created by a bunch of guys who figured that to them the most exciting part of Magic was building the deck. It wasn't necessarily the actual gameplay. Also, people who tend to like limited formats like booster drafts or sealed deck, they tend to gravitate toward it. I always loved sealed deck tournaments when I played CCGs, or that dates me, I think.
No, you're fine.
Trading card games, the kids call them these days.
I enjoyed taking the huge hundreds and hundreds of cards that I had collected and putting them in certain kind of piles.
Mm-hmm.
And then with four or five people, I guess realistically we did an early version of deck building with Magic the Gathering.
Mm.
We'd have a stack of mana, a stack of spells, and a stack of creatures.
Mm.
But it'd be multiple colors all mixed together.
Mm.
And you would draw seven cards, but it was your choice which seven to draw. You just knew, I'm going to get something from the land, or I'm going to get a spell, or I'm going to get a creature.
Mm.
And so it played like Magic any other way. It's
sure.
Just everybody used the same pile of cards.
And you really wind up now with card games. There's about four distinct, and if you hear interference or anything like that, my cat Morgan is nuzzling up to the microphone. Our apologies. But
the cat, the mic, let's get it on.
But yeah!
The microphone, calm down, you.
So anywho, I don't know how much you edit these things.
Nope, but, not at all.
So that
this is going to be raw.
That was my fiance. Anyway, there's basically four schools of thought when it comes to card games in general, outside of things like poker. You just use regular cards. So you have collectible card games, Magic the Gathering, Legend of the Five Rings, Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, etc. Where collect the cards, build your stuff with the cards, bring your own deck. I don't know what's in yours, you don't know what's in mine.
Let the war commence.
Exactly. Then you have probably the second oldest group in gaming is... like a set card game, where it's a set deck. It's going to be the same cards every time you play. That could be something...
Give an example.
It could be something as simple as Uno, I suppose, but in a tabletop gaming sense, something like Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Now, did Sentinels of the Multiverse come out before, like, Dominion?
No.
So technically, this style deck building came out before...
Well, this isn't... Something like Sentinels isn't even a deck building game.
Right.
But it's the deck building style. Hey, we have a guest.
Yeah.
That
so we may start all this over, or we may just continue. Whatever. I do a little editing from time to time.
Well, it's only Joe Budnick, so...
Only Joe?
It's only Joe, so we can probably just keep going.
Or we can add him.
We can add him. I mean, he'll have stuff to talk about, too.
I tap one blue mana, one white mana, summon Joe Bud.
There we go. So...
So we're going to be talking about deck builder games, Joe.
Cool.
Feel free to jump in. We've already had Mrs. Fiance. I don't know if we're saying her name or not. Mrs. Fiance throw in with some U's. So, your participation, as always, is...
Actually, a question. Did I just steal your seat from
no.
back and forth?
No. No.
But they're all her seats, so yes.
I'm cooking.
So, at any rate, something like Sentinels of the Multiverse or Red Dragon Inn or something of that nature, where it's a set deck.
Right.
Probably revolves around a single character or concept,
yeah,
and it's the same every time.
Those are more just a game that involves cards.
Well, I mean, it is a card game by definition. Then you have... Then the other two that are more closely related in some way, shape, form, or fashion, you have a living card game, trademark Fantasy Flight. You have a living card game where it's, here's every card that ever comes out. It's like buying factory sets for
right.
Magic.
Now that's Star Wars and Doomtown are the ones I know off the top of my head.
Star Wars, there's Doomtown, there's Lord of the Rings one, there is Netrunner, which is probably the biggest one at the moment, would be Android Netrunner.
And the thing to really recall about those is almost all of those started their life as collectible card games.
A great many of them did.
But there was just such a gout of CCGs in the late 90s, early 2000s, that some died.
Yeah,
but some
most.
Were seriously loved.
Yeah, well, I would go more than say some died. I would say most died.
Right.
I mean, realistically, from that time frame in the late 90s, only two collectible card games truly survived to today.
Pokemon and Magic?
No, not even
and
Pokemon.
And L5R.
L5R and Magic are the two elder statesmen, and Magic is the only one that has gone uninterrupted. L5R changed hands three times.
Yeah. See, Magic came out in 1993, I think.
Right. L5R came out the following year.
And Pokemon came out in, like, 95 or 6.
I thought it was later. I thought it was late 90s.
No, it wasn't that late, because I remember graduating high school and taking my brother and sister to the mall. And I was married in 96.
Yeah, I guess it was, because that was when I got fired by DCI. It was over Pokemon. They wanted me to run Pokemon tournaments. I told them no, and they told me, your services are no longer needed as a tournament coordinator.
But I guess Yu-Gi-Oh! Came
Yu-Gi-Oh!
Out shortly after that, and it's still out.
Yeah, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Is like the goofball, probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense game out of the batch. And I say that because Yu-Gi-Oh! They didn't set out to make a card game. They set out to make a cartoon, and they wanted the game and the cartoon to be as authentic as possible, so they actually made rules
right.
for it so that it would work. And then, lo and behold, it became a card game that's immensely popular. The last category is deck-building games. And the deck-building game and the living card game are closely related because they're both basically for players who like the experience of building the deck, but not the collectability aspect.
Or like the aspect of the game and not the collectability
right.
aspect.
But a living card game is for the person who wants to have every option in the world at their disposal, build their deck, bring it, like a CCG, just minus the collecting part. Whereas a deck-building game, to me, is more for the person who likes the limited environment, who wants the booster draft, who wants the sealed deck, who thrives on the limited resources, where
and
everyone
that,
starts
and
out the same.
And the aspect of chance and random,
well,
what
yes.
shows up.
I get that point, but I think there's a fundamental difference
okay.
in that I've only seen the Doomtown living card game.
Right.
And realistically, it looks like the old CCG game, just a little cleaned up.
Yes, it essentially
okay.
is.
So, you buy your box, I buy my box.
Sure.
We can theoretically, I know it's mathematically next to impossible, build this exact same damn deck.
Oh yeah, it can theoretically happen. But at the same time, it's you built your deck, I built mine, we both had
right.
the exact same set of resources. It's not a case of like a CCG where...
Pay to win.
Yeah, he who
no,
has
no,
more money
but
wins.
What I'm getting at is...
Mm.
So let's use a Star Wars example, since most of our listeners will probably recognize some fun names.
Sure.
If I build my deck based around Luke Skywalker, if I live long enough, going to get Luke Skywalker.
Yes.
Okay. In the DC deck building game that you like so much,
I
might not get Kal-El, Last Son of Krypton. It may come up during someone else's turn.
Sure.
You know... Those cards, now, some cards are going to be, what, stock cards, like Kick?
Right, there are certain cards that are always available.
Right, right.
That's a fundamental part of
but
deck building.
Let's say there's 80 cards in the set, and you play just set specific. There's a very good chance I'm not going to get access to many of them
right.
because of the amount of players in the game.
Right.
And I think that's one thing about deck building that a lot of people don't realize. I have noticed playing with you, and I may be imagining it, and you fix me if I'm wrong. But let's say I, Joe, you, and Richie are playing a deck-building game.
Sure.
And you go last.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the first two rounds, total rotations around, you've already decided what your strategy of purchasing, quote, drafting cards is going to be.
I think there's a... If we start getting into the gameplay philosophy of deck-building games, I think they all have some very fundamental similarities. Dominion becomes the oddball out among these, oddly enough, in that Dominion, which is the granddaddy of them all, so to speak, Dominion, until the stack runs out, in Dominion you have every card available is in a tableau out in front of you from the word go, and until that stack is depleted, you will always have access to getting that card.
As long as you have the resources, you can buy it.
Whereas a game such as DC, which falls more under... You basically have two In my head, you have two subsects of deck building. You have Dominion-style deck builders, and you have Ascension-style deck builders. Dominion-style deck builders have the tableau. You have access to everything at all times.
And if your strategy
involves it, you should theoretically have access to it.
Well, you can sit down.
The random comes from drawing the resources to actually purchase certain more expensive
cards. In Dominion, you can sit down and look at the 10 cards and decide right then and there
what your strategy
is going to be. Yeah. You might not stick to it. You might change it up. I remember playing a game with one people. We burned through it so fast, the cards. In Dominion, if you empty 3 piles, it's the end of the game. Then you count the victory points. Our victory point totals were 5, 4, and 3. And you start the game with 3.
So that doesn't surprise me, unfortunately.
Then you have a game like the Ascension-style deck builder. Ascension, and I may be wrong on this, but I believe Ascension is the one that introduces the concept of the lineup, where you have a main deck, you flip 5 or 6 cards, depending on the game, 5, 6, 4, whatever, how many, off the top of the deck, and that forms the purchasing row for your turn. Some games, as you buy cards, you replenish them immediately. Other games, it waits till the end of the turn. But regardless, the person who plays after you will have access, no matter what, unless you just flat didn't buy anything at all, to a card you could not have bought.
Now, I don't know.
Furthermore, they have access to the information of what you have picked up.
Correct.
Right. So in the tactical element, you also have, well, I mean, we joke around and call it hate drafting, but in reality, you're trying to sabotage somebody's plan that you've already seen start to take shape and form.
Or, probably more to my play style, because I know you had mentioned this, especially if I was going last, a lot of people, I don't understand why, hate to go last in a deck building game.
Why?
Yeah, that's my general question.
Information is power.
A lot of people don't like going last because in their mind, especially if it's a game like DC where there are heroes involved, so in DC Deck Builder, which is my personal favorite, you have a hero that is essentially your avatar for the game. And my hero may be Wonder Woman, and she's going to have a special power attached to her. That power helps dictate part of your strategy. You're going to have
a degree.
Yeah, you're going to have a strong suit to play to. Her strong suit is villains. If I go last, everyone at the table knows I need villains, and if they want to hate draft against my best potential strategy, they're going to buy all the villains before I do. That's all well and good. My thought process is, I really don't care where I go in the turn order, but if I go last, I get to see the first picks that everyone else makes. The first couple of turns don't necessarily, first couple of rounds don't necessarily set your strategy, because it's also
limited resources.
Right.
But
point. I can kind of see where you want to go. And let's say, to your example, it's Joe, you, Richie, and me, I'm last. You're playing Superman, and you pick up a kick. Superman plays to powers. There was other stuff on the board you could have bought, but none of them are superpowers.
Right. So, yeah, that's probably what I would have done anyways.
Joe's across the table from me. Joe has Batman. There was a Batarang on the table. He dropped 3 power. He could have bought a kick, but he opted for the Batarang. Yes, he threw a power away, but Batman plays towards equipment. Richie's over here playing Booster Gold. And Booster Gold likes defense cards. So Richie picks up Bulletproof. There was other stuff on the table that he could have bought that would have given him more power, but I can tell he's going to play to his strength. Okay, I have Nightwing. Nightwing likes equipment cards just like Batman does. But I look at the table and go, okay, I can either choose to fight Joe over all the equipment, or there's a couple of heroes on the table that are fairly cheap. I can go for a hero strategy and try to get those. And over there's Green Arrow, who plays well to that. It's another card in the game. And Green Arrow gives you bonus points for having heroes. Maybe I'll just pick up some heroes on the sly, and that'll become my strategy.
I must aggravate you. I must aggravate you. Because mine is, what can I afford this round?
Well, I mean, it's...
There's a simplicity to DC that lets that be perfectly viable without bothering to go for a meta
because
strategy.
There's
it
been a
works.
Handful of times where I've won the game simply because I bought more cards than everybody.
See, sure. One of the limitations with DC, in terms of its lineup style and its particular design decisions, is I find it's very true. I think Richie was the one who pointed this out the last time we were in a big group playing it, at least. I tend towards a specific strategy. I don't tend to go for the card draw, the deck manipulation, and if I can draw my deck every turn, I'm happy as a clam.
Right.
It's a very powerful strategy for DC. I find that 9 times out of 10, it's my hero power just happens to be a perk.
Yeah.
I don't really care about my hero power. If I can make it work with what presents itself, and if I can get that card draw out early so that I deny it from everyone else because it's powerful anyway, it's great.
I don't remember what card game we were playing, but I remember playing with Coop one time, and he figured out a way to, like, discard most his deck. And then he ended up drawing most his deck. And it was crazy. I was like, what are you doing? You're down 17 cards. You know, you only got 17 cards in a game that you score points on how many cards are in your deck. But he was able to control his turn with such clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was ridiculously powerful. I don't think he won, but he damn sure had more fun than everybody.
It can be a heady and fun feeling, but it turns it, a bit more into a single-player game in certain situations, because I stopped caring about the rest of y'all. I stopped caring about the very...
I have noticed
and
that.
And the other problem is at that point, the incentive to replay again and again diminishes slightly. Because I'm always probably going to rely on that strategy because that strategy is A, powerful, and B, prevalent even when you divide up into the different specific sets. Mm. Unlike something, say, Star Realms.
Yeah.
Very simple, very lineup game. I will play toward a specific faction based on what shows up sometimes, but really it's every game is sufficiently different enough that I stop caring about a meta strategy like I have in DC that just works all the time.
So, essentially, when you look at deck building games, the first family of deck builders, so to speak, is your point salad games.
Point salad?
Yeah. Point salad is a term that's used more often for Euro games and things like that. They use that as a term for he who gets the most points wins.
Okay.
And usually there's lots of different ways to get them. So
ways of the greens, everything else is toppings that may be worth more depending on the player.
For instance, let's use Ascension. Ascension, the primary way to score points is to buy cards or defeat villains, defeat monsters. But there's multiple ways to do it.
Right.
So you have different, whichever one becomes your primary strategy, the other one becomes the topping.
Well, I thought that was so amazing about Ascension when I first sat down and played. It was like, okay, you're collecting cards, but I don't know what they call them in the game, but I always call them reward points.
Honor.
Is it honor?
Yeah, honor.
And I thought it was so amazing. If you wanted to, you could just blitzkrieg the honor by killing the generic bad guy, the cultist.
Yep.
And every turn, you could be getting between 1 and 3 points.
Yep.
And if you do that quicker than people are buying stuff, you might win the game.
Yeah, you could win. Now, you have a game like DC, and I think DC is arguably more of a point salad game than Ascension is because DC has multiple cards in it that will allow you other strategies. The primary strategy, again, is buy cards, get points, beat supervillains, get points.
Well, to my knowledge, there's only one alternate win in DC.
There's additionally an alternate win condition and other ways to get points.
Right. No, I mean, I'm just...
But yes, there is an alternate win condition.
90% of DC is collect more points than your friends.
Right.
The other 10% is give them weaknesses more than you get yourself to lower their point total.
But for instance, the primary way to score points, get cool cards, beat up the supervillains, which is also your game end mechanic, but cards like Utility Belt or Green Arrow or the Suicide Squad all provide alternate bonus incentive ways to score points that will synergize with a strategy. One that you mentioned, the idea of keeping your deck super small. We played a game once. I forget who I was playing with, but there's a card in the game named Deathstorm who is worth 10 victory points. He's worth more than virtually any other card in the game, I think, except the Phantom Stranger. But
the exception is for every card over 20?
For every card you have over 20 in your deck, his value drops a point.
Okay.
So you have to keep your deck at 20 cards or less, and I found myself going into what I jokingly call Coop mode, where I was keeping track of and counting cards in my deck all the time. I think I wound up with 70 points at the end of the game, and I had 18 cards.
Now, I'm not a big fan of Legendary, so I haven't played it much. Is there an I know there's a multiple lose condition. Is there an alternate win condition?
So Legendary is
a co-op,
sort of.
From what I understand, the Legendary is you go into it with your group and you decide up front what type of mode you're playing it as. You could be playing it as a legitimately cooperative gameplay mode,
right,
where the whole purpose is to not lose.
Oh, to win the game.
Because yeah. Which there I are prefer. A lot of lose conditions
right.
in that game.
Right.
The other is a competitive mode where it's not just we don't want to lose, but I want to come out of it as the shiniest hero who
right,
has
right.
the most
well,
standards, whatever.
Even
and
when your co-op win or co-op lose, people will go, oh, well, I've got 31 points. How many did you get?
So, in something like Legendary, Legendary...
It's an intent at that point,
right.
really.
Legendary is a deck-building game by Upper Deck. The initial one is themed around the Marvel Universe.
Is there another one?
Actually,
Aliens.
There are two other ones.
Yeah,
one of them.
Aliens and Aliens and Predator, which... Yeah,
yeah
and they... I'll jump over to them in a second, because they're closer to Shadowrun, which I'm sure we'll talk
okay.
about, too. But something like Legendary, actual Marvel Legendary, you have... three different versions of play. And all of them play identical. It's just a matter of intent, like Joe said. So one of them is purely cooperative, at which point the game becomes the whose line is it anyway of deck building games. It's the game where you make the story up and the points don't matter. Because
see,
nobody cares about the points, just beat the bad guy.
Right. I like that style.
Sure.
And I remember playing a few other games.
It's a deck build at that point it's a deck builder's version of Sentinels of the Multiverse.
There's a
yes.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. There's a Panic at the Castle, I think it is. It's like a board game version of Tower Defense.
Castle Panic.
Yeah.
Castle Panic, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. And when people started going, oh, well, it's also a competition, nope, I'm out. I'm good.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you'll let the bad things happen because you didn't get the points. And I'm not interested in that.
No.
Then
it's trickier when you get the card game style where you can do that. Like with Legendary, that's why it's... You go in up front and you say,
right.
do I want to play cooperative with y'all today, or are we playing competitive? Because one of the other things with cooperative is it's not just beat the bad guys, don't lose.
Right.
It's at that point, you're discussing across the board with what shows up, going, all
right,
so you've already gotten
right,
all
right.
of these cards. How about, since this is
help support your
up,
deck.
Right.
I'll leave those for you, I'll grab these, because these will work for me, they may not be ideal.
And then we play like Markiplier and just buy all the Maria
yeah.
Hills. I don't know if you saw that on
yes,
tabletop. I liked it.
Then you have something like, when you're playing in Legendary, then you have a, what I guess you would call semi-co-op mode, where you are playing cooperatively, everyone is playing with the stated intention of... we're going to beat the bad guy. We're going to count the points at the end, and we're going to see who the front dude on the cover of the comic book is at the end of this. But,
if we don't beat the bad guy, it's irrelevant.
Yeah, it's a case of, it goes from being, I guess this way, but it goes from being just one of the guys, this is a terrible analogy, but I read DC, not Marvel. It goes from being one of the dudes on the cover of the Justice League when the Justice League is like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, it's the All-Stars.
Right.
To when you play semi-co-op and one person's going to shine more than the other ones, it's who's going to be Batman on the cover of the Justice League when the Justice League is like Batman, Blue Beetle, Booster Gold, Red Tornado, Black Canary, Vibe, Jinx, and Vixen. So...
Crap! I'm a Gotham City police guy who
yeah.
just happened to help.
Yeah. Who's gonna be... Are you going to win as the All-Star team, or are you going to be Batman in Justice League Detroit?
Or worse, are you going to be the Gumps on the cover that shows, hey, y'all are all beaten.
Yeah, we all got beat up.
Defeated.
Then there's the what I would consider the cutthroat cooperative play, which is sometimes very fun and often less than ideal, where it really becomes... And Legendary is... Frankly, I think this is a bad thing about Legendary. I find it is a bad, bad negative to it. You will have players who will get super cutthroat, and they will basically sit there at that point, and if they realize they're so far behind, they're not going to win, which can happen.
They'll tank everybody
else. They
tank
the game. They will purposely sabotage the
okay.
game at that point.
So when we started this, I wanted to make sure we touched upon what I considered the four concepts.
Mm-hmm.
So we touched Dominion, the living card game,
mm-hmm.
the deck-building card game,
mm-hmm.
and then it's kind of side cousin like Ascension and Legend, which had...
Well, there's still a deck-building game, but a different
right,
style.
But a different style. I think Legend really kind of stands on its own with it being a co-op deck game. DC's not. Ascension's not.
D- DC has a mode, but that's just a but that's addition, now. Not a. It wasn't an original right. design intent. Yes.
DC, it.
But
it
you was, couldn't lose DC.
Yes, you can.
How?
If you play DC Crisis.
No, no, no. Original.
No, the original DC.
If you ran out of. Yeah, the main loose condition was if you ran out of purchases.
Okay, so technically, if you ran out of cards to purchase before the bad guys were gone, you technically lost the game.
There is an everybody loses condition.
Okay, I did not know that.
Yeah. But as with someone like me, where I own everything for DC, I even bought 2 copies of DC Rivals so that I could take everything that was main deck compatible, throw it in the main deck, and still have a copy set aside to play. You'll never run out of the main deck.
The company that makes that is
Cryptozoic.
Cryptozoic. And they make the Naruto, the Street Fighter.
They call it the Cerberus engine. They use it for a lot of games. They use it for DC, Naruto, and Street Fighter, which are all, I believe, what they call the Cerberus Hero games. But the same engine, the same rules, mechanics, and everything are also used for Lord of the Rings / The Hobbit.
And that's the living card game?
No, this is... Lord of the Rings gets confusing because there's a Lord of the Rings living card game, and then there's a Lord of the Rings deck building game.
Which is made by Cryptozoic.
Cryptozoic makes a deck building game.
I played that once.
Yeah, and then the living card game is Fantasy Flight.
Okay.
So you have that one. The easy way, I guess, for those people out there who care about the semantics of it, the Fantasy Flight version is based on the novels, the Cryptozoic version is based on the movies.
Okay.
And then they also made
it's like Lord of the Rings.
And which subsumed the old CCG version?
Are you talking about the ICE?
Which one subsumed Middle Earth?
Yeah.
Believe that's the Fantasy Flight one.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And then you have...
Convoluted that whole...
I own a few of the cards because I recognize the characters. I never played the game.
And then the last one I think they use it for is NHL Power Play. So they actually even adapted it to a sports game.
All right, so before we get out too far, Joe brought up a topic I wrote down because I didn't want to forget. Sure. And that was play versus the game or play versus the player. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where deck building game really differs from a CCG because in Magic, you can play the player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have played with very good decks and got beat by very good players.
I would argue that in a CCG and in a lot of card games in general, but I would argue that it's not at all unlike poker. When I sat down, I played CCGs competitively for quite a while. I played L5R competitively. I never sat down and played my opponent's deck. Played my opponent. Because, especially if I knew him. Like, if I sat down across from Joe, it never occurred to me to even bother with what was in Joe's deck in my mentality, my strategy, because I had the very... Well, no, it's not... you're chuckling, but the reason is because I have the philosophy as a competitive gamer, you can hide a lot of things, you can't hide your style.
Well, I get that because...
Joe plays the way Joe plays.
I chuckle because one thing we did notice... quite keenly compared to back in the BattleTech days. Part maturity, because back in BattleTech I was still, middle school?
Yeah.
I was an immature little bastard. but I build decks a lot more keenly now.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is because I talk about it a lot more with everybody else.
Everybody goes to the phase of, oh man, I gotta put the big monster in, or in this case, giant mech, or whatever I love, that's gotta go in the game.
That's also part... you know, working with other people to make sure my decks are as well built as possible. We noticed this when we went down to Kotai's.
Yep.
Specifically. Or when I had that brief stint in Magic where I was going to PTQs. And doing rather well, and usually the folks I was with weren't, so I wouldn't stick around because I'd have no ride and no place to stay. But one thing I found is I can't do always the play versus the player. Something I found out specifically in Kotai's and PTQs is I won't know the person. I won't have a damn clue about the person. They're not somebody who's, like, high name. They're in Inquest because they're regulars, and they're not folks I know from the local area.
But what I always found, and I never played Magic competitively. I did play L5R competitively. When I couldn't read the player himself, like, if it's a local tournament, I know what I'm getting into when I play Joe Budnick. I know what I'm getting into when I play Travis Cooper. I know what I'm getting into if I play Nathan Starwall. But if I go down to a bigger event, I could also look at what did my other person draw. And this is where I'm still playing the player, but I'm using the game to do it.
All right.
Someone drops, at the time I was playing, again, I'm going to date myself, when I was playing Ohio competitively, if someone drops Naked Lion is the deck they're running. When they drop that, at that point, I now have information about the player. At that point, I now know, okay, this is someone that wants a, you know, that favors a fast, aggressive play style. How can I use that? I don't necessarily worry about what's in his, what his flavor of it is. It's also one of the reasons that I really enjoyed playing the fact, because my thing in those games is always to figure out the faction where I could be the chameleon and do whatever I wanted. But
Now, I played Magic, never competitively, but I played Magic a lot. Yes. And I played...
I think everybody did.
Well, no, I mean...
for
what I mean is,
some stretch, yeah.
I played a lot from people, mostly with people who never played before. So a lot of times, I was teaching people. And while I never played competitive, I did know a lot of the competitive rules.
Sure.
And it was that understanding that made me hate competitivity. When I would tell people, like, listen, you have a main phase, a battle phase, and then a second main phase. If you skip the one, you can't go back to it. And things like that, you know. Or, you forgot to untap your cards. In a competition, that can cost you. We're not competition, go ahead and untap it and take your turn the right way. And it was things like that that I was able to help people get into gaming. And but kept me from the competition, because I could remind people, because I did the same crap. And so, you know, play the player, play the system as well. I mean, I know it's kind of a douchebag maneuver, but to some people, a W is a W, you know? Especially when there's money on the line, I can't really fault them too much.
Well, and then that's something else. I think that's another reason I like deck building games. Deck building games are competitive only in so much as, you know, who has the shiniest point total at the end of this game
round.
At this table.
Yeah.
You know, I know Cryptozoic has just recently started doing, like, competitive events at conventions, but their version of a competitive event, which I would love to go and play in one, but the reason I'm playing it is not because of any great, big, shiny, prestigious prize. It's because when you get to the finals, and I think it's really cool, the main deck, which is the size of a standard box for them, it's about 120 cards. The 120 card main deck is made up of cards from every Cryptozoic Hero game, every Cryptozoic Cerberus Engine game, and one thing. So there's going to be NHL cards in it, Lord of the Ring cards in it, DC, Naruto, Street Fighter cards in it. It's going to be made up of all of the above.
Bless you.
Thank you.
And the winner gets that one-of-a-kind custom main deck at the end of the tournament.
It's a pretty nice twist,
I guess.
No,
to me, it seems like chaos.
Well, but
it is. Part of that is the chaos element that you're thinking of is part of the reason why it's the competition style. It's you. If you only played the Street Fighter, specifically,
right,
on its own, there are a lot of mechanics that you may not have seen before. And whether or not you adapt well to them,
well, and more so
it plays part in your competitive, air quote, edge.
And more so than that, there's 120 cards. Several of those cards are duplicated. I can very easily memorize what cards do what, and what cards are worth what amount, and how often I should or should not see them if I'm going to be a competitive player. They build that one-of-a-kind main deck so that no one can predict it.
Right, right. I get that. There's no way I'd remember crap like that to begin with.
Yeah.
But to the topic of player versus the game, I think this Dominion is a player versus game big time. Realistically, there's not a lot you can do against your opponents. There are a few quote-unquote attack cards and only like one or two defense cards.
Okay, now I see what you're saying.
You get what I'm saying?
Mm.
So you start building your deck to beat the game, and the game is get the most points. I get the most points by generating, short version, 8 gold with 1 time to buy, I'm going to buy the main victory card. As soon as that pile's empty, the game is over.
See,
well, if I bought 7 of them, you got very little chance of catching up to me.
Barring specific sets in the tableau.
To a lot of people, though, and those people aren't wrong, you just described 99% of all deck building games on the planet. Because, and here's why I say that. BC. Aside from a handful of attacks, which hit the entire table, I have no interaction with you on your turn. outside
True,
of...
True, but on some... your turn, you can do something to kind of set the deck up against me.
No.
Or the not... board.
I, but...
That's what
the,
I meant.
That's just the difference between the lineup and the tableau style. Yeah. The stylistic inclination you're pointing out here of play versus game, when you put it that way, doesn't really care if it's lineup or if it's tableau.
Yeah, I'm not referring
no,
to...
No, I mean, I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
But it's a game like...
But it's starting to fall down... Okay, if we put one side on... at 0 and one side at 10, you know what I mean? This game's at 0, this game's at 10. I think DC is starting to move away from...
DC's closer to 0 than 10.
Oh,
and,
definitely.
And here's why I say that, because if you're going to use that mentality, 0 is Dominion, where there's as little random chance as humanly possible as it relates to a card game anyway.
Right.
And then you have, and what you do on your turns not genuinely going to screw with my overall plan, minor inconvenience maybe,
right.
But the interaction's a minimum.
Oh no, you bought the last moat. Oh well, I won't be doing that in my turn.
The other end of that equation at the moment is Star Realms.
Okay, so
Star Realms is an Ascension style deck builder. Lineup and so on.
Yes.
Okay.
I own the digital version.
I have the digital and I have a physical version of it.
We could bust that out later and show them off if we want.
And essentially, Star Realms is... It's not me. The point, there are no victory points, there's no nothing. It's me versus you. I have 50 hit points, you have 50 hit points,
gotcha.
And it's blow your shit up.
Gotcha.
And while you're not going to defend, per se, what you buy can put roadblocks in my way to hitting your life total.
Right.
You can bust the combo that I'm trying to build
out.
So
it's closer to a CCG
in
of
that,
you know, I got 20 hit points, you got 20 hit points, let's make this happen.
And then if you want to find, DC probably is a 5 on that scale. I would err Ascension to be a little bit closer to Dominion. I would err Legendary to be a little bit closer to Dominion. I really can't think of something that is a non-co-op.
The living card games are probably closer to the 10 in this aspect, because you are building a deck to play against a person. It's just everybody gets to start off with the same base.
Sure, if you're lumping them together as one category, yeah.
Well, considering most of them were based off of the original CCG concepts for those games, too.
Oh, yeah.
Doomtown is.
Yeah. It is.
I mean, it's not a deck building game, but it's a living card game.
Right.
Right. That's a distinction.
Yes. The distinction, deck building game, make the deck during the game. Living card game, CCG style, bring your deck with you.
And then Heroes of the Multiverse.
Sentinels of the Multiverse is...
Okay, Sentinels.
Yeah. Sentinels of the Multiverse is a set deck.
Right.
And then you play with that set deck.
Against the game.
Or against other players. Red Dragon Inn would be the competitive version. But I think, you know, if you go through... If you want... Actually, you know what? I tell a lie. I would not say Dominion is the 0 on your scale. The 0 on your scale is something like Shadowrun Crossfire. Or Xenoshift. Where it is truly, no matter what, it's a cooperative...
Right, right.
Deck building game where the game is going to the
Try
game
to
is
you.
Your enemy.
All right.
So
if we could for a moment, since we said we'd come back to it and we just brought it up.
Sure.
Talking about like Shadowrun Crossfire, I think that actually deserves its own category. I think it's a category in formation as more games of that line come out, and I'd call it an evolution card game.
Yeah.
Because there's a definitive manner of progression in the game. You have the scenarios, you have experience values on your cards that you track in terms of your hero card. And it evolves toward a story. And there is, theoretically, a definitive end. You will, at some point, run through every scenario that's listed.
Well, Mike and I talked about this
out.
On the trip over here. Have you seen the Pathfinder game?
See, I have not.
I would give that title to Pathfinder more than Shadowrun. And we might just have another guest showing up. I would give that title of an evolutionary card game more to Pathfinder than Shadowrun, because Shadowrun doesn't really have the set story yet. It God bless them, I hope it does, because I love the game. But
the concept is, the underlying concept of why it would be called an evolutionary card game is the same. You have a progression mechanic that doesn't care about a single game as much as a series of games, and you have an evolving, you have a sense of changing conditions, changing scenarios. Scenario list like Level 7 is a more board game style of that same trend.
To play devil's advocate for a second, the only thing that evolves in a deck building game like Shadowrun Crossfire is your character.
Right.
When the game starts, when you start a new game, you're going to start with the same 7 cards that you started with last time. You're going to start your deck anew.
Unless you as the player has purchased upgrades from playing the game previously.
Or, as I understand it, or how the scenario changes how things start.
The scenario may change from what I've seen in the box, but it doesn't change you. It changes the difficulty of what you're facing.
Now, the flip side is something like Pathfinder. Pathfinder, to me, truly does evolve because your character is your deck. You keep the same deck from adventure to adventure because that's the stuff you've looted from bodies. I mean, that's the go raid the dungeon, loot all the goblins, take their shit, go sell it. It's
what you don't keep. Well, exactly. That's why I think it's also considerably in card games more so than board game style. This is an evolving category. It's a new category. It's still in its formation because you still have attempts that don't succeed. You still have attempts that are looking for story, what you're hoping with Shadowrun. Then you have attempts like Pathfinder who, out of the box is sounding, hey, we've got this right in the first go.
Using that mindset, all the games are an evolution of what came before anyways. I mean, each one is... it's funny, as we're discussing this, we see how it goes from a CCG to a Ascension, Dominion, then to Ascension, and now we go, hey, seen what we did in Ascension, and seen what we did with CCGs, let's combine those and make DC, and I think it's really neat how these things keep coming out like that. But they build upon what already exists.
Ultimately, we're all just still playing chainmail from the 1970s.
With just different guns.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because, Pandemic.
Sure.
Until they put the rule in for the traitor token, it was the game that hates you and wants to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And, everyone played together to beat the game, or you didn't. And when I first played that, I mean, it just...
wipe the floor with you.
Well, it was like fresh oxygen. It was amazing. It wasn't Monopoly,
right.
And I love Monopoly, but...
I'm sorry.
I'm the only one, so...
I enjoy it. It's just most people hate it, so it never gets played anymore.
So you think, Pandemic and other games like that, where it's you against the game, not you against the players.
I would love to, at the risk of creating discontinuity in your recording, I would love to do a part two of this because there are other games. Like, I would actually like to sit down and discuss. Have you played High Command?
No, yes. I don't even know what that is.
High Command is the War Machine card game, and I would call High Command an evolutionary step because High Command falls somewhere between being a deck building game and a living card game. I mean, it truly is right smack dab in the middle.
Well, just to throw caution to the wind in the midst of this. And I don't know how long it's gone. We might be getting close to the end. You have a very wonderful table here that we could droop a camera over the light, and we could play some of these.
Absolutely.
We have a YouTube channel.
I've actually thought about that for other things.
I've heard rumor of this Two Fools Network YouTube channel.
Yes.
I hear there's a Toku podcast that gets wonderful ratings on that channel now.
I don't know if it's wonderful ratings, but it is like the number... episode 1 of DensiCaster is our most viewed. Not the most minutes, however, but the most viewed. You'd think for a 2-hour podcast that got put on YouTube that it would... I don't know, have more minutes, but it has like 24 of the 300 views we have on our channel. So, I mean, my brain's doing very bad math. It's one out of 12 views on our channel is that. And DensiCaster episode 2, when I just left the house, this is Saturday, August the
8th.
The 8th. It went
up
on the
1st. Yep.
It's already up to 9 views, which I know is not the greatest, but
We are the grassroots movement on YouTube,
I mean,
folks.
our YouTube channel is averaging about 4 to 5 views per video, and we just happen to have 60 videos.
Right.
Because we're doing Let's Plays, you know what I mean?
Well, I would be down very much with it at some point doing like a Let's Play, throw a camera up, and we can play
some of the
deck building games and various other games. I would love to do that. You're at about 45 minutes in.
So, I mean, any closing thoughts, Joe? I mean, is there something like, I guess this is the time to give the shout out for the card deck building game that you like absolutely love, or something you'd like to hear see change?
Well, one of my problems is when we've gone through like the categories, there are so many parallel evolutions on the board game or the miniature game side of it that it's almost a shame to just focus on the card game, because some of the mechanics have yet to make the transition from these other forms that could be really neat in a card game form. Like some of the stuff in the Witcher board game. Now, granted, I haven't played it, but I've watched it both with...
Yeah, I only played it the one time.
Y'all here and a couple of different online
forms. But it did have
it has a couple of mechanics that I think could turn
concept
into a pure card game version, or be brought to a pure card game. That would be pretty interesting.
Well, see, that's funny because we're sitting here talking about the DC card game, and in my head, I kept thinking HeroClix. And I was like, how fun would it be if you had a dick building game-esque game, but you had the little figurine of Superman, and the cards you bought allowed you to do things against the bad guys, quote unquote, who maybe had their own card mechanism?
The
hybridization at that point.
Yeah.
Or the Sentinels
of
the Multiverse. I really enjoy the game, but...
They actually have a minis version now, too.
But
they have a board version.
That's cool. I do enjoy Sentinels, but my distaste of it is probably what everyone actually loves about it. And it's generic, nobody characters. So I have I don't give a damn. It's an okay, fun game, but it don't make any sense to me because I'm Ra, the Pharaoh who burns things.
Okay. Well, it's like any game. If you either play it for the mechanic, you play it for the fluff, or you play it for the people you're playing it
with.
And sometimes it's all of
these. That's like when we played the Naruto game with Chris Brown.
I know squat about Naruto. I don't like Naruto. Don't care about Naruto. I like the game.
But
the game is fairly fun.
I like the game because it's DC deck building with a new skin on it, so I like that.
I knew next to nothing about the source material. Mm-hmm. But I did. I really enjoyed the extra mechanic.
Yeah. Okay, my turn?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I guess if I want to give closing thoughts on deck building games, it's my favorite right now style of tabletop gaming, are deck building games. My favorite is DC, but my favorite being DC is partly because I love DC Comics. There's a deck building game out there for probably, if you're a geek, there's a deck building game out there for the genre you like, of your particular type of fan. If you are a comic book nerd, there's DC, there's Marvel, pick one. You're an anime fan, well, there's Naruto.
Game out there somewhere.
If there's not, there will be. If you are a fighting game...
It's a matter of time before there's like a Battletech living.
Dude, if you're a fighting game...
Have you ever played Werewolf? The card game where one or two people in the group is a werewolf. The card is not a card game.
It's a hidden role game.
Death Note would make a perfect version of that.
If you like anime, there's Street Fighter. If you like magic, there's Ascension. If you like medieval, Kings and Castles, there's Dominion.
If you like big stompy robots, there's probably something out there. We just don't, surprisingly enough, have it.
Not counting
High Command, because High Command's a...
I said, it's the hybrid. But there's different ones out there for whatever genre, whatever style you like. You like sci-fi, there's Star Realms. So, they exist, they're out there. Find one you like. Love it, play it, whatnot. Mechanically, if you're looking for groundbreaking mechanics from game to game, frankly, at this point in time, you're not going to find them. Because a deck-building game is a deck-building game. It's either Dominion or Ascension, depending on what flavoring and seasonings they put on it. But one thing that I will say, when you find the one you like... And it's my personal preference. Not everyone even in this room likes this idea, but when we play DC, we're using my copy, so screw it. get all the stuff and play with what you can. That's one of the things I love about I love deck building games for the randomness, the fact that it makes you change your strategy on the fly, the fact that you don't know what's coming next. If I had every Ascension expansion that was out there known to man, I would have a deck that reaches this chandelier light above this table, and we would be having to reach up and flip off the top because I would have them all together. DC, I have everything for DC in one main deck because that's fun. So my whole thing with deck building games, if you want something that's unpredictable, that is going to make you think on the fly, that to me, I think, that phrase, think on the fly, that's my appeal, the appeal I have of a deck building game.
But the most, but another important aspect.
I disagree that it's a universal concept.
What's a universal concept?
Thinking on the fly?
Thinking on the fly.
Oh, you're right, because that's not the concept for Dominion, which is why I don't like Dominion. I sold him my copy for $10. So.
And meanwhile, earlier I was arguing about DC, where the strategy I have works almost universally. Even when you mix everything up, it's something that I would go to, so I tend not to think strategically.
Well, but it's almost universally, and you're going to have to make certain decisions on the fly. Yeah, you always buy cards that make you draw cards. That's the one thing you constantly do. It's like, there's Kid Flash
that
on the table. It's like, Kid Flash is on the table. Yeah, he costs two. Yeah, he only lets me draw one card.
To put it in a
better
way.
There's a kick out there, but I want to draw cards.
Well, to before you guys separate too
way,
far,
it's deck management.
Before you guys differate too far, the one key thing I think you didn't add, but you should have in yours was it's self-contained.
There's that too.
You can buy the one game and play it. And if you don't want to buy the other seven versions of it, you're not missing anything.
No.
What? Whereas in Magic the Gathering, if all you have is, you know, the year 2000 edition, you have missed 15 years,
and
three sets a year, 45 different sets of cards.
DC Deck Builder. You don't like the Justice League. Okay. Then don't buy the first set. I want to play, you know, I want to have the bad guys. I'm, you know, a villainous person at heart. Then play Forever Evil. Teen Titans Go is the greatest cartoon of all time. Well, then get the Teen Titans set. I root for the underdog heroes that nobody likes. Then get Heroes United, because that's the one that Booster Gold is in.
There's nothing wrong with Booster.
No, Booster Gold's actually one of my favorite heroes in concept. But he's forever, like, B-team to a lot of people.
I think it's funny. It's like, I didn't like Moon Knight in Marvel because in the beginning he was kind of like Marvel's version of Batman.
Yeah.
He was a mercenary who bought gadgets and did crime fighting.
Right.
Now, there was a supernatural and a bit of a psychosis later on that I wasn't aware of, but that's the way I always looked at it.
Mm.
So, Moon Knight, F him. And now it's like,
see, that's where
Booster Gold. He's like, what, DC's version of Iron Man with some time travel thrown in?
Not really, but sure.
You know what I'm saying? He's got a belt and a ring and...
No, he's the tech hero.
Right.
But he's the tech hero from the future that is the smart-ass, smarmy superstar guy.
So, right. Yeah. Okay, so since I got to be the host and I get to get the last word in, I'm going to go with this. When starting this, I said deck building and was just throwing all kinds of card games into the pile. And hopefully, like me, you learned a little something to differentiate them. But the main trick is you don't have to. They're all games. Find the one that makes you happy and play the hell out of it. I'm interested in expanding this, so if anybody at the table, and just in case you have keen ears and heard a fourth person come in the room, that was Richie, he just didn't join us yet, and maybe next time he might. So for Two Fools Podcast, I'm Dave, and these are my guests,
Joe, Mike,
and we'll catch you on the flip side.